This is our last time that we'll be conversing like this, and I wanted to take the opportunity to not just do a lecture and, you know, end it in that way. I wanted to be able to speak to you more personally. And if somebody out there in the wide, wide world, you know, wants on the internet, wants to eavesdrop, I guess that's okay. They can do that if they want. Normally, we would have one last session where we would do kind of a victory lap. And I would go around and say, this is a day of full participation. Everybody is going to say something. And I would call upon volunteers and then eventually start asking by name, give me something from this course that has really, you know, stood out to you, helped you, impacted you in some way, and tell us why. And on the board would be a list of topics, and it would pretty much be the syllabus, you know, the two pages that are the schedule. And those have been enjoyable times, and it's interesting to see the variety of students, you know, what you all would say, because you're so different. And so I'm going to make that participation points for today by email. And if you would get this to me by the end of Monday, by midnight on Monday, it will count as participation for this day, which is Monday, April 27th. And so tell me again then, briefly in an email, just tell me, what about this course stood out to you, like really helped you or was significant or you really enjoyed? And then say why. Why was it so? And that will be then your final participation points for our lecture and sessions together. The other thing that we would do is we would go around and say, okay, anybody have any questions? You know, questions, answer, just one last shot, free for all. What do you think? And it would be challenging to do that, obviously, by phone or even with 38 students by Zoom. And so here's the way I want to work this final question-answer thing. I hope to have your questions that you have asked from the lectures tidied up, finished up, and posted by Wednesday morning. I would ask that you would look, pertaining to the lecture that you have a question about, that you would look on that document on Wednesday to see if your question has already been answered. And of course, I've already emailed all of these out, so you don't have to wait until Wednesday. You can just go through your email account and look at what you've deleted and find the one that pertains to that day, that lecture, and that document. And so don't wait until Wednesday. I mean, start looking even now. I'm asking it just as a favor. I'm going to be seeking to finish these questions up from last week and then tidy them up. So I'm going to be busy working on that end of it. I'm going to ask that you would take the time to look and see if it's already been asked and answered in that bank of question answer documents. And once you've ascertained that it has not, then please email me. Ask me, and I'll seek to give you an answer and help you out. Lord willing, I mean, we're all finite, so there's been a lot of answers, questions that I haven't known the answer for offhand, or I thought I did, and then when I check, I realize, well, I wasn't quite right, or I didn't realize this aspect. I've learned a lot over the last 6 weeks. So, that's the plan, and I hope that makes sense to you. You have to let me know by email if there's something here that does not make sense to you. And so, that's the plan for the questions, asking questions. Now, I also hope to send to you, and it should be already in your email box today, a full set of notes for each of the lectures. And so that all that were the PDFs, of course, you could pull it down, but I've already created a document that has them all together in one piece, one whole. And so that'll be available to you as well as a PDF, and you can use that to study. There is online, in the original online documents, that I gave you in the syllabus initially, and there is there a set of study guide notes compiled by a student several years back. My lectures have changed a little bit. I can't, you know, guarantee that everything there is going to be accurate. And so I wouldn't make that your first source. And if one of you came up with a study guide that was like fuller, we might make that available for future students. So hopefully you understand what I'm helping you with reviews. You'll have the question answers that you can go back and look at. You have the full set of notes. Great. Now let me talk about your current assignment. Due at the end of this day is the assignment, the review on Andrew Del Banco, The Real American Dream. That's due midnight tonight, Monday, again, April 27th. I will hope then to have that graded this week as well. It will probably be more Wednesday, Thursday kind of thing later in the week. And so I do not know that I will get to your Machen review. I apologize for that. If it had been turned in before spring break, I probably would have had it finished. But because it was turned in the day the world caved in, as it were, I was avalanched with my high school classes, trying to convert them to put them online, as well as to get you guys launched online. And it just created, it just took away the time to do it. I have 38 of you students, and I can usually get 4 reviews done in an hour. And so to find a block of time of that magnitude has been challenging. So I can't say that I won't do it, but I'm not going to guarantee that I will. If I don't get around to grading your Machen reviews, I will give you all 100% if you turned it in on time. 80% if you turned it in within a week. 0 if you didn't turn it in at that point. And so unless you had been given a prior extension, requested and had a prior extension. So hopefully that's clear as far as where we stand on the reading, the writing assignments. And so finish those up. Send those to me today on Del Banco. And I may send you something as well that I also wrote in light of that book. And you may find that of interest just because it's been the topic of our past week. Okay, well, let's talk about the final exam and what that involves. And then I'll try to give some summary comments to the whole course and then just a final personal word. So here's what the final exam is going to involve. I've been thinking about this. First of all, know the scope of it. The provost has allowed the professors not to live under the requirement of a comprehensive exam. So that's a blessing because some of you have told me your notes are back at Hillsdale College. And so, that's going to be hard. So we're going to limit the final exam to just what we have done online. It will not count as twice as much as the midterm like originally planned. The midterm will count for probably 15% of your grade now, and the final for 15%. Unless you do so well on the final that it makes the grade better. I'll probably, because the syllabus is like a contract or an agreement, and where I said in there that's 10% and 20% for the final, I'm going to be flexible to just make it, be whatever gives you a better grade. And it's pretty easy for me in an Excel spreadsheet to do that and just see which one's better. But just know that it's going to just cover what we've done online. So the notes that I send out and the question and answers we've done and all that, that's all it's going to be required on this final exam. Now, some of that's going to incorporate things that we did earlier, like the two needs, fundamental needs of mankind, revelation and resurrection, which obviously God's words and God's work. And so, things that we, fact value split, things that I introduced that have retained their value to this point. I'm going to require you to know that you were part. That's part of the course for the whole thing. Okay, so but as far as like specific content, specific material, you understand just the online material. Another thing that we're going to do with the final exam is we're not going to make it a memory test. That would be, how could I ever police it? And I know you guys, as students, take, you know, an honor. You have an honor code, and you agree to it. And I have found that to be of great value, and I've relied on that when I ask you, did you read this or... You know, but on this, because so much weight is riding on it, I just want to eliminate as much as I can that idea of like making sure nobody's peeking and being tempted even to peek. So for that cause, then this will be open book, open notes. The only thing I'm requiring that you do on honor is that you don't go texting anybody or calling anybody or, you know, emailing anybody or something. This is strictly your work. Now, with that in mind, we're not going to do, obviously, fill in the blanks and, you know, multiple choice and put in order or matching. Nor are we even going to do the one-sentence answer discernment problems. If I were to ask you, tell me the difference between the regulative principle and the normative principle, you could actually, like, look on your notes and go, well, there it is. And then type it in and that's that. So this is going to be strictly essay questions, and I'm probably going to give you some choices on it, and I'm going to grade it. In other words, choices meaning I'm not going to require you to do all of them. And then as far as like grading it, I'm going to grade it on the same way I've been grading your essays. If you just did it to get by and you put something on the page, you know, that's a solid C. Basic, unless it's like just really chintzy, it might be a D, or I'm not even going to give you credit. So just to get by is a C. If it's a good answer and kind of like, okay, it's a knowledgeable answer, it's a reasonable answer, then that passes. That's good. I'd say that's a B. It's a good answer. If it has something special in it, like a key insight. And I can tell from your questions, some of you are really getting the material. There's some key insights. You have like gone underneath the content to see subterranean connections, to go, how about this and that? It's that kind of key insight you've seen into the material that I'm going to give A-level scores to. And I know some of you are at that level, and so may you be given... the facility of speech to be able to, you know, represent what you truly understand in order to get that credit for that. So this is not going to be something that you could just cram, you know, on Thursday night and just kind of stuff your head full of information and kind of spit it out on Friday. If you've not been tracking all along with this material and really engaged with it, I doubt you'll get that A level, because that takes time to soak in the material, and that's exactly what I'm wanting to test on this. I want to reward those who have walked the journey, put the effort in. I want you guys to receive the credit that you are due, and so if you have not, and it's, you know, for whatever reason, this is your warning right now. I would say, not just to use the notes, but to skim through every question and answer document that I've sent so that you would understand some of the deeper connections and stop and read some of the answers. You're probably not going to read all of them, though you could, but it'd be quite challenging. But look at the ones, key ones that just stand out to you, that give you a sense of the kind of like, let's press a little deeper than the initial presentation. So that's going to be important for you to catch up. But I dare say it would be impossible if you basically kind of blown this off. It would be pretty much impossible to come up with an A-level answer on Friday, though I do think a B level answer would be possible, because it would just show basically I have taken in what was on the notes and those PDFs, and I understand that without maybe the key insights, but I at least understand that. I want to reward that with a B on this final. So I hope that's understandable. You have then your participation grade for today. Give me a statement, and then as far as where this course is of value and why. You have your Del Banco review due today. Get that by the end of the day. Then you have the question answers to look over. If you have any questions on anything, go through them first before emailing me, and then you'll have, Lord willing, a whole bank of them on Wednesday. Now, as far as the format goes for the final exam, you will need this capability. You will need email and Microsoft Word. You need that capability. If you do not have that capability with good, reliable internet, you need to go to a place or find a place or obtain that, because I'm going to time you. I'm going to send out the test at the start of the exam time, and I expect the full test to be typed and submitted within 2 hours as a Word document. So you will have to manage your time, pay close attention to where you're at, not risk it. But I expect that Word document would be emailed back to me as an attachment at the end of your time allotment. Now, in feeling out some of you, whether some of you in the 8 o'clock hour could take it at the 1 o'clock time slot, I got some quick no's back. And so if you are not going to take it at the time that you anticipated, because now you can't, and I heard from one of you on that, and that's going to be only for you 8 o'clock class time period people. Maybe it's, whatever, it's 5 a.m. in the morning in LA or something. You have to get prior approval from me. And so let me know. Otherwise, I'm just going to assume that when I send that email out, you're on the other end, and I'm expecting it back at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time if you're in the 8 o'clock hour. If you're in the 9 o'clock hour, I will expect the exam back at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, I hope that's understandable. So again, you'll need email, Word, Microsoft Word, and reliable internet. Okay, now let me just give a final statement on the theme of our course before I close. If you remember, the main statement that we have given, where the Western theological tradition has landed, is that we are now in the midst of a fact value split. Of the three controversies about God and Christ in the patristic era, salvation in the Reformation era, we are now dealing with the controversy over the Bible, over more broadly revelation and interpretation, or hermeneutics and epistemology. So the fact value split is right in the center of that. We saw that that came about historically because of the Enlightenment failing to give the answers that man's pride expected. Reason assumed that we could just examine everything and know the universe and find out its fundamental laws and understand everything. And of course, reason alone doesn't even give you a sense of God. And God, the weight of God waned and went to the periphery of Western culture. And the answers weren't forthcoming. And when the answers didn't come, there was a line of despair. But instead of going back to Revelation, which is the heritage of the West, especially from the time of Augustine onward, where the Word of God, basically went applied to everything, started getting applied to everything. from that time period where it was faith seeking understanding. Faith then being the starting point, and then understanding working beyond that. That shifted over time, and there was a little bit of a, we talked about it, where the role of Aquinas, where philosophy and theology get split, according to Joseph Ratzinger's comments, as well as Francis Schaeffer's comments. When we come to the Enlightenment, though, you know, reason's way over there, and faith is relegated to the realm of just value or meaning, but not connected to fact. So once the Enlightenment fails, then instead of going back to revelation, the West questioned rationality. And when the West questioned rationality itself, the law of non-contradiction not actually being the thing, being true, then at that point, there's a split. There's a split between our scientific method that we rely on to get data on the physical world, and now even applied into, you know, the world of the mind and psychology, the world of culture and sociology and anthropology. We rely on the scientific method to give us fact, but when it comes to meaning, personal identity, value, that's now freely chosen. It's the realm of freedom, which is ensconced, as we said on Friday, even with Supreme Court decisions in America. And so there doesn't have to be a connection now between our values and our facts. And of course, this shows up in many different realms. We saw it in liberalism, where the kind of the extension of the pietistic form and heart being separated, where you could have somebody, their creed is say weird, but we say, oh, they have a good heart. And we separate the two as if somehow there's no connecting between their thinking and their being. There's kind of a disconnect there. Eventually that disconnect becomes full separation, where now the spirit of Christianity is this piety, this feeling of piety, disconnected with the wording of Scripture. And so the husk is then shed, and the kernel, that spirit of Christianity, remains. That whole program of liberalism, theological liberalism, not the political right now, but theological liberalism, is an expression of fact, the fact-value split. So the Bible can be full of errors when it comes to history or the cosmos. It could be flat-out myth. But yet what it's pointing to about a kind of a religious relationship with God, a dependence on God, is utterly, you know, valuable. Well, this is similar to progressivism in the American history and jurisprudence, of a kind of a living document, or using, you know, evolution as kind of the model for interpreting the Constitution, rather than Newtonian mechanics, and it's just acting as if the law is pure logic or something like that. Both are caricatures about the nature of law. But you can see the progressives then did something similar in detaching themselves from a document. So on the theological side in the West, it would be the Bible or creeds or such, and in the realm of legal history, a document like the Constitution. Well, when it comes to personal value, personal meaning, when it comes to ethics, we see fact value splits all over the place, where one's gender identity is separated from one's biological sex, where the identity of a person is separated from this is a living human being. Somehow you can separate those two. I mean, conceptually now, as a model, a fact-value split is so common. Even down to the postmodern interpretation of American history that we saw in Del Banco, that basically man has to imagine a bigger picture for himself if he's going to be lifted out of his little bubble and be given a sense of bigness to transcend the little self, so that he doesn't live with with the just crushing, suffocating feeling of I'm a little bubble on the stream of life that's about ready to burst. But he can be distracted from that and have hope. Well, that's that kind of postmodernism. It may work psychologically for a little bit of time and give somebody, in that delusional sense, give somebody a sense of meaning where they forget about the vanity and the temporality of life and the fact that they're dying. But eventually, whatever label you call it, eventually reality hits. Kind of like one author called it the rock of recalcitrance. You know, where the image was out there in New Hampshire, a guy was trying to landscape his lawn, and he started digging and removing stones, and one stone was like 30 feet in diameter, granite or something ridiculous. Eventually, you come up with a reality you can't move. And Ecclesiastes says it's death. And so that's the final arbiter, the final equalizer of all values, and it finally makes everything not just repetitive, but final. And Ecclesiastes says it brings us a sense of vanity and futility of life. And so if there's nothing more beyond that, then yeah, enjoy the moment in a kind of existential, you only live once sense. But it's not going to fight ultimately against nihilism's temptation to say, what keeps me alive? Revelation and resurrection are the answers to these things. And so there is no freedom to define myself that just sits insulated from everything else. It doesn't matter whether it's me personally trying to define myself compared to everybody else. That will only, if I insist on it, it will only drive me into a little world occupied by me. And maybe a few others that might want to agree with me. But I think that's part of the loneliness of the modern era. Or it may be, say, you know, a whole religion. You know, a whole view that says, you know, we're gonna live with this kind of delusion. Eventually, the granite of history rolls over it. It could be World War I with regard to that kind of positive thinking, optimistic of humanity liberalism of the early 20th century. But eventually reality hits, because what is right ultimately conforms to what is true, and what is true ultimately corresponds to reality. And so I'm just kidding myself, as the prophet says, they have healed the brokenness of my people superficially, saying peace, peace, but there is no peace. If I don't dig down to the rock of reality, which Jesus' words being true correspond to that, and he said, the foolish man builds his house on sand, the person who hears my words and doesn't do them. But the one who hears my words and does them is like a man who builds his house on rock. So when the floods hit and the winds blow, it doesn't fall over. We need to have truth. It can't just be healing superficially so I am psychologically okay for a while, having suppressed certain guilts and having and ignoring certain realities, and I feel good psychologically for a while. Del Banco, with William James and others, may call that a truth in that it works, but I would say ultimately it doesn't work. And even by their own definition, it's self-defeating. It does not work because the person's dead. I remember one of the famous scientists who was pretty caustic on religion. It was in Vogue magazine. The quote was, and I saw it on a blog post, the last hour of his death, he finally admitted that, I used to say every experience will just make me better. You know, tougher, better, stronger, I think is his word. But I now admit this does not. This experience does not. How can death make us stronger? Death is the last enemy, the Bible says, to be destroyed. And it is an enemy. It is not good. And I'm thankful that God can use bad things for good, like the cross of Jesus Christ bearing our sin. God can use it for good, but it in itself is not good. And so, I hope you can see the pervasiveness of the fact-value split, but then of the need to not live with it. You need a fact-value union. Your values, call it your loves, must be based on what is true. Call it your faith. You need to have a true faith, and you need to have a love for what is truly glorious. That ultimately is going to be God, your Creator, and you will know these things not by testing it according to the bar of your own experience, which is always going to be limited, not just you individually, but culturally. And you're not going to be able to test it by the bar of your own reason. You'll never be able to ascertain enough facts. Job is so clear on that. Ultimately, you will never attain that kind of certainty to build your life on something that is truly solid. You'll never be able to attain that by trying to imitate God, by being infinite. The only way that you will obtain it is through the personal invitation that he gives you to talk to me, and I'll talk to you. He is the personal infinite God. We were made in his image, not in the realm of the infinite. We are finite and always will be, but we are made in his image in the realm of the personal, so that we can have personal interaction with him, so that we can hear his revelation in words, as he speaks in words. We can hear his revelation in words, and through believing in the Son of God that he points to, then have life in his name, have resurrection. I want you to remember the definition of the gospel. It is the good news that God is now fulfilling his promises in the person and work of his Son, Jesus Christ. God gave promises in words, in human language, and then he himself, his Son himself, became man to communicate fully with presence and words and works who God is in our dialect, in our context, so that we can truly understand him. And then bearing our guilt, not just us personally, individually, but the world, bearing the guilt of the world, that if we believe in this one, then our guilt is removed on the basis of union with him through faith, and that having died with him, been executed, as it were, in the eyes of God with him, we are cleared of guilt, and then we are filled with the Holy Spirit, enlivened in him to walk in newness of life and rise with him someday in the kingdom of God. It's a message in the New Testament. And so I hope that it's understandable then, the significance of the fact-value split. The fundamentalist modernist controversy showed clearly how denomination and group after denomination and group are facing it. And so it's pervasive. All right. Well, I just want to say in closing, I have appreciated the interaction with you. We started this course by saying, I will profess what I believe, and I don't want to pose and put on a face and make myself out to be more or less than what I am. And I invited you to do the same. And I've appreciated how many of you have spoke your mind. You've done so respectfully. I believe that in large part, our interchange has demonstrated the possibility of true academic discussion. I know I have learned, and I trust that the same has happened for you as well. And if I can add, the surprise about this has been to me how personal some of this has felt just by iteration. The fact that every 2 days I get a question from you and then get to respond, and then I read your essays and I hear maybe your response in email or different. Just the fact that so many of you have done regular participation in that way, I honestly feel like I've gotten to know more of you this semester than the normal percentage of students I get to know who take the time to actually come to my office and have a face-to-face conversation. I think I've actually gotten to know more of you students this time around, percentage-wise, than ever before. And so I am appreciative of your openness, of your depth of questioning, of even the personableness by which you have responded. And so thank you. I trust that you have appreciated the same from me. If in any way I have failed you, please forgive me. I look forward to the good that this course has done. And so, if there's anything I can do for you in the future, could be academic, it could be personal, please don't hesitate to ask me. I do not teach other courses at this college other than, say, an occasional collegiate scholars seminar, which I did one this spring. And so this is probably our last official time together, but that won't matter. If there's something I can do for you, please let me know. And so God bless you. We talked about blessing. God bless you, and may you be given the strength and wisdom, what you need to finish this course well, and then to also stay well and to be well. And so, all right, if I don't hear from you, I will send out those things I mentioned. And on Friday, I definitely expect to hear from you. All right, Lord bless you. Bye.